back here on Downtown at 4:30 on a Monday afternoon. Our next guest on the program is the author of a number of books, including Moonlighting and Oral History. And we're so excited to have a chance to get him back on the show to talk about some exciting news for Moonlighting fans. We say hello to our friend Scott Ryan. Scott, welcome back.
Ah, thanks for having me. And I'm sitting here dancing to Al Jarreau. He's sounding as smooth as ever.
Absolutely. Well, the news came out last week, and last time we talked with you, we discussed some of the issues. But for anybody who might have missed it, what took so long?
Well, the main issue was the music rights. Just like holds up the Wonder Years and many other shows from the 80s, China Beach went through this, 30-something. Back in the 80s, they didn't sign contracts for streaming because, here's something for you millennials, there was no such thing as streaming. It wasn't invented. There wasn't even home video yet. So some of these songs were put on the show by a handshake deal. So there was no contract for any of this, and it's just taken all this time for Disney to finally say they want to pay up and sign those contracts.
So who should get the credit for this? How much of a role did Glenn Gordon Caron play in making this finally come to fruition?
It all comes down to Glenn. He was the one that contacted Disney and said, let's make this happen. I talked to Glenn one day before the announcement. He called me to give me a heads up, which was very kind of him. And, you know, he said that always the music was important to him. And he told me that all the major songs that play a major part in plot are there.
Well, that's fantastic news. But you're right about that, too, because for those of us who love Moonlighting, it would be hard to take some of those songs out of the mix. It just wouldn't be the same show.
Yeah, and you know, the most famous episode as far as the ratings go is the episode where Dave and Maddie finally do it. Well, it's totally edited to Be My Baby by the Ronettes. Now, if they, you know, just put in a score there, or, you know, they change it up and have some song you never heard of, like Be My Good Friend, you know, you'd be devastated and it wouldn't match. You need to have that drum beat and that excitement and all of that. And, you know, there were a couple songs I immediately asked him, did we get Be My Baby being one of them? He said yes. You know, there was nothing that they said no to. Now, for the diehard, no pun intended, not all the music is there, but for the majority of fans, you're not going to notice. So it was instrumentals that are playing, like when Dave and Maddie are on a case and they go into a bar. You know, the song that was playing, it might be a different song now, but, you know, very few people are going to remember what song was playing then.
Well, that's a good compromise right there. You know, all these years later, Scott, there's still and has been no other show like Moonlighting. It remains, and others have tried to copy that style, but what was it about that group of actors, writers, directors that made it so different from anything else on television?
Well, it was that question that led me to doing the book. It drove me crazy for years. I never understood why there wasn't a show that was alive as Moonlighting. And to me, that's the way to describe Moonlighting. And I can't wait for new viewers to consume this on Hulu. It starts October 10th. And they're just going to see, like, every show feels dangerous and like it just happened. And it's because it did just happen. The reason it's never happened again is because ABC allowed Glenn to write that show on the fly. And sometimes they were editing the episode on Monday night to get it out on Tuesday at 9. So it didn't go through censors. It didn't go through executives. There wasn't a load of people having their hands in what happened. It all came from Glenn Gordon Caron, and at least for the first three seasons. Then, you know, they started to tighten the screws. But that's why. I don't think anyone has ever been given that much power on a network TV show before or after.
Well, and their willingness, and it became part of the show, to break that fourth wall, to talk directly to the audience, but also to break character and to refer to, well, even their own struggles at coming up with new episodes. And I think that made the audience bond with everybody on the show even more.
Yeah, and I'm curious how that's going to play in streaming when people are binging these episodes, because there were a lot of jokes in the show about reruns. I watched this show when it was on, and you might go 4 to 6 weeks between episodes, and it killed you. And the TV Guide didn't even know, because they weren't sure. They used to do promos saying, "We don't know if this week's episode is going to be new or not. Tune in to find out." And that wasn't like a marketing ploy, which it would be today. They literally had no idea if they would finish it in time.
We're talking with Scott Ryan here on Downtown. Well, the magic between Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis was undeniable. And we talked about this with you before. It's hard to imagine now that there were folks at the network and in other places that absolutely did not want Bruce Willis.
Exactly. In fact, the casting agent was fired for bringing Bruce. They said, "I can't believe you would even bring him up. You're fired. We don't ever want to hear this name again." He did get rehired once they finally hired Bruce. But that's how they just said, there is no way any woman would be sexually attracted to Bruce Willis. what are you talking about? He goes on to be, you know, the sexiest man that comes out of the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, and Bruce Willis to me is that classic guy, and this description has been used with others, but I feel like it was invented for him, that every woman wanted to be with him and every man wanted to be him.
Yeah, and I certainly wanted to be him. He influenced me so much. I was 15 when the show started, and his smarmy attitude was exactly how I felt. And I think fans of David Letterman and Bill Murray and all of that kind of thumbing their nose at authority and not taking themselves too seriously is just right up a Gen Xer's alley.
And of course, there were well-documented tensions on the set, especially after Bruce had become a movie star. But it seems like as time has gone on, and you brought it up a lot in the book, that everybody has mellowed a lot, and Cybill Shepherd certainly looks back very fondly on what this show did for her career.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard for Cybill at the time because the show was pitched as being a star vehicle for her. And then you have this unknown actor. But when the show ends, Bruce had done Die Hard, which was the number one movie of the year, and he was the biggest movie star in the world. And I think that was hard for her. But she's over it now. When I interviewed her, she never had a bad thing to say about Bruce Willis. Ever. She loves him. She loves Glenn. You know, it's just a pressure cooker situation. They were getting these scripts sometimes at 3 a.m. And they had to do them tomorrow. And you know, if you've seen the show, you know they talked fast. It wasn't like the lines were easy. They were musical. They were lyrical.
And with the news of late about Bruce's condition, boy, it adds a whole new level of poignance to what's going on here, because he was so good and so quick with those rapid fire lines and that brilliant timing. And it makes his condition even that much more sad.
Yeah. And I don't know this for a fact, but I like to think that helped everyone bend a little bit to make Moonlighting come out. You know, Disney might have seen, well, this is a good time to pay tribute to Bruce Willis when people are interested. And Glenn might have said, you know what, let's bend on a couple of these songs that weren't plot-based and get this out. Because I love Bruce Willis as an actor, as an action-adventure person, of course. But as a comic actor in Moonlighting. He's brilliant. And I'm glad that that isn't going to be forgotten. I think it's going to be a surprise to people who only know him from Die Hard.
Oh, there's no question about that. And of course, the supporting characters, it wouldn't have been the same kind of show without the work of our mutual friend Curtis Armstrong and the wonderful Elise Beasley.
Oh, of course. And Curtis is like, he did everything for that show. You want to put him in a dress, put him in a cake, he does it. You know, you want him to sing Sexual Healing in the wrong key, he does it. I mean, there is nothing that Curtis did not do for that show. And at the time, people kind of turned on Agnes and Herbert because they wanted to see Dave and Maddie. But again, with streaming, I don't think that's going to be the case. And I feel like television now does devote episodes to other characters. So I think those episodes are going to play better. And, I mean, you've got to be impressed with Curtis Armstrong in his Casablanca spoof episode. It's one of the best episodes of Moonlighting, and I'm excited that it's going to be there. And the other thing we have to talk about, it's not just that it's streaming. They have gone back to the original negative and upgraded this to 4K.
Mm.
It's going to be beautiful. Nobody has seen this before. Like, the DVDs weren't done with that. It's never been done before. So this is going to be like seeing Moonlighting for the first time, and it's going to be in complete high def.
Well, and you mentioned Curtis's great work on the Casablanca episode, but he was also great in what might be my favorite episode, Atomic Shakespeare, because he was the only guy who really had some Shakespearean experience.
Yeah, and they gave him all the exposition
right
in that episode. So he has some Shakespearean soliloquies without, like, the jokes that Sybil and Bruce get to have. I mean, everyone's great in that episode. But when you watch it from a critical standpoint, you see that Curtis is carrying the water.
I also cannot wait to see, because it's one of my favorites, and I think it was the episode right before that, chronologically, the brilliant idea of setting an entire entire episode of the series to Billy Joel's song, Big Man on Mulberry Street.
Yes, that is always tied for my favorite episode, because I'm a huge Billy Joel fan, and Big Man on Mulberry Street is my ringtone. So when you called me for this radio station appearance, Big Man was playing. That episode is incredible, and I think it's going to be the single most pivotal episode for streaming, because I think our culture today might want to say, well, David Addison's inappropriate, and he shouldn't be saying those things. But once you get to Big Man on Mulberry Street, you learn something about David Addison that reframes all of the things. So hang in there before you judge. These are complex characters. These are not internet characters from today. These are very real, complex human beings, Dave and Maddie.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Scott, because, yeah, as we learned as the series went on and we learned more about David's past, it added so much depth to the character and explained some of the things that he did along the way, and it made the series and that David and Maddie relationship that much richer as a result.
Yeah, and it's true of Maddie as well. You know, it was a big deal that a female owned the business. That, you know, going out in 1985, that wasn't what was put on television. Maddie was a trailblazing character. And then as the series goes on, they really do develop the David character beyond his wisecracking comments, which, you know, I wish I would have developed out of my wisecracking comments. Unfortunately, I never did.
Well, for those of us who loved the show when it was first on and have gone anywhere to find episodes online through the years, so excited to have it come back. And do you think that now that it will be out there on streaming, that Moonlighting will take what I think is its well-deserved place among the greatest series of all time?
I do. I think especially the fact that it's hitting right during this writer's strike, because it's going to be a while before television comes back. And, you know, people are just given a beautiful gift of 66 great episodes. you know, there's you can argue about whether season four, some people love it, some people hate it. It's my favorite part of my book because I get behind the stories of why season four happens. But I still love it. I think this is going to be a treat to people, and it's going to give them something that they haven't seen either ever or haven't seen since the 80s because it's just not been around.
Well, I think what people need to do, Scott, if they haven't already, is to get your book, read that, and then be ready for the streaming debut next week.
Wow, I didn't even think of that idea. I mean, what an idea. I like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you buy it directly from me at tuckerdfpress.com, I can sign it.
Even so better right
go
there.
Go out there, and it's in full color, and it's a heck of a story. So I think people are going to be excited about it.
That's a wonderful plan right there, pulling it all together. Scott, it's always great to talk with you. Appreciate you making some time for us this afternoon. I plan on going back and rereading the book before I get a chance to watch those episodes again. But thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. We'll talk with you again down the road.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.